There are people who want to give him another term and more time because they look at him as a person who can deliver.
Prime Minister Narendra Modi seeks another term as voters in India head to the polls. It's Wednesday, April 10th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. And you can join us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Australian snake venom may help stroke victims. Chinese professors targeted for free speech. Indian women knit their future. LA fossils unearthed. And climate change creates jobs. It's all on today's VOA Asia. India's elections begin Thursday as Prime Minister Narendra Modi hopes to return to power as he projects himself as a strong nationalist leader who will carry forward the country's development. On the campaign trail, Modi has steered clear of more contentious issues such as rising unemployment and rural distress. Reporter Anjana Pasricha spoke with voters in Uttar Pradesh in northern India, the country's most populous state, which has the largest parliamentary representation and is key to holding power in India.
Harvesting his sugarcane crop in Sonda village, this farmer recalls the promises made by Prime Minister Narendra Modi when he rode a populist wave to victory 5 years ago.
He has shown us many false dreams. He promised to double prices for our produce. We never got anything.
Despite being disillusioned, he still plans to cast his vote for Modi's Bharatiya Janata Party because he sees no viable option. Growing rural discontent due to plunging farm incomes is blamed for electoral setbacks for the BJP in three state elections in December. But the party hopes a recent measure to give $85 annually to farmers with small plots will revive support. It has promised to expand the cash handouts to all farmers. The payments have pleased those who have already gotten their first installment.
At least we will be able to pay for fertilizers and water. Before, what I earned was spent on paying for inputs like these.
In the city of Meerut, where Modi launched his 2019 campaign, many like Siddharth Vats are fired up by the leader who ordered airstrikes on what India said was a militant camp inside Pakistan in February.
There is improvement in India. Our economy is developing. During recent hostilities with Pakistan, he took a tough stand. This is happening only because of Modi.
But others question his record. Mujahid Mansuri worries about rising sectarian violence by cow vigilantes targeting Muslims and feels that Modi failed to live up to his 2014 pledge to create more jobs.
We need food on our table for our family. We need jobs. We don't want anything to do with a polarized environment.
In these towns and villages, there is support for Modi. The latest poll predicts he will win 50 out of the state's 80 parliamentary seats, still nothing like the 71 seats he captured in 2014. An alliance between two powerful regional parties in Uttar Pradesh has made the contest tougher, but political analysts say the BJP hopes to ride back to power on Modi's image.
Whether he gets a majority is the question mark. But yes, there are people who want to give him another term and more time because they look at him as a person who can deliver, a strong leader, a leader able to take risks. So let's see. But it's a very polarized country today.
The direction that voters swing in big heartland states like Uttar Pradesh will determine the outcome of India's election. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, Uttar Pradesh.
These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Architects of Hong Kong's umbrella movement convicted of conspiracy and incitement. President Moon travels to Washington to revitalize North Korea talks. More Indonesians join cases against Boeing after CEO apology. Support grows for suspended Tsinghua law professor in China. Japan's imperial couple faces nearly unprecedented situation, retirement. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia and stop by the voanews.com website. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Venom from a dangerous spider could give stroke patients a better chance of survival. That's according to Australian biochemists. They found that a neurotoxin secreted by the Fraser Island funnel web spider contains a molecule that stalls the effects a stroke has on the brain. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
A bite from the Fraser Island funnel web spider can kill a person in 15 minutes, but its venom could be life-saving and used to develop a drug to prevent brain damage. Scientists say the toxins can shut off a pathway in the brain that triggers the widespread death of cells after a stroke. Researchers at the University of Queensland believe it's a breakthrough that could protect stroke patients while they're being taken to hospital. Doctors often talk about a 4.5-hour window to give proper care and drugs to stroke patients. Those who live a long way from a hospital can suffer the consequences. The research team believes a drug developed from spider venom could be administered immediately by paramedics, protecting patients from further brain damage following a stroke. Professor Glenn King is the lead scientist.
The brain becomes acidic, and it turns out there's this little ion channel sitting on your neurons called acid-sensing ion channel, which senses this decrease in pH. It turns on, and it sets off a cell death pathway for reasons we don't understand, and your neurons begin to die. And so what we found in the venom of the Fraser Island funnel web spider is the best known inhibitor of that channel. And if you inhibit that channel, you prevent the neurons dying. So we can't stop neurons that have already died, but we've shown that you can give this drug up to 8 hours after the stroke and still get really massive protection of the brain.
The Fraser Island funnel web spider is unique to the Australian state of Queensland. It lives in burrows beneath soil and sand. Clinical trials are some way off, but the team says that experiments with rodents have been successful. The World Health Organization says that stroke is the second leading cause of death globally and the third leading cause of disability. In Australia, it's estimated that 56,000 people suffer a new or recurrent stroke each year. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, South Korean President Moon Jae-in is heading for Washington to meet with President Donald Trump. Moon has said he hopes his trip to the United States will revitalize stalled talks with North Korea after Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un failed to reach an agreement during their February summit. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad, as always, to have you with us today on VOA Asia. European Union leaders attending a summit in Brussels signaled progress Tuesday in creating a fairer playing field for trade and investment with China. The stakes are high for both sides. The EU is China's largest trading partner, while China is the EU's second biggest export market after the United States. Lisa Bryant has more for VOA from Paris.
Speaking to reporters after talks with Chinese Premier Li Keqiang, European Union President Donald Tusk said China had agreed to address a key sticking point, concerns about industrial subsidies that critics say give Chinese businesses an unfair advantage.
It is a breakthrough. For the first time, China has agreed to engage with Europe on this key priority for WTO reform.
Premier Li told reporters that China supported fair competition, was committed to working within the framework of the World Trade Organization, and was strongly against industrial espionage. But he also said European companies could expect fair treatment in China.
We will not treat EU companies, especially those registered in China, with discriminatory policy, including solely foreign-owned companies in China, and likewise, Chinese companies should not be discriminated against in their operation in the European Union.
The EU-China summit is an annual meeting. This one, however, came amid heightened tensions over Chinese dominance of key European markets, perceived barriers for European investment in China, and security and privacy concerns regarding Chinese telecommunications company Huawei, which are shared by the United States. The EU is also split over how to deal with China. Last month, Italy became the first G7 member to join China's global Belt and Road infrastructure infrastructure project. On Thursday, Premier Li holds another meeting in Croatia with Central and Eastern European states. Last month, French President Emmanuel Macron warned that China aimed to deepen European divisions and said the time for naivete was over. Europe has previously accused China of failing to follow talk with action. It may have been reflected in European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker's cautious assessment about this latest meeting.
Today's summit is a big step in the right direction. But commitments are only worth anything if we deliver on them. And that is what we must do in the weeks and months ahead.
The EU and China have also emphasized key areas of agreement, such as fighting climate change and supporting the Iran nuclear deal, which are in opposition to Trump administration policies. For VOA, I'm Lisa Bryant in Paris.
Support is growing in China and abroad for a liberal law professor at China's Tsinghua University who has recently suspended for criticizing Chinese President Xi Jinping. But how big an impact the backlash will have on the university's Communist Party-appointed leadership or in China's academic circles remains to be seen, according to observers. Xu Chengrun is one of several dozen cases of academics recently silenced because of their dissenting views. 2 weeks ago, Tsinghua University launched an investigation into Xu after he wrote articles that boldly criticized the Communist Party's repressive policies in recent years, including last year's constitutional amendments to scrap Xi Jinping's two-term limits. So far, Xu has been silent about the investigation, but has shown no signs of caving to the university's suppression, according to Hu Xia, a rights activist in Beijing. Seven professors from the United States, Australia, and France have initiated an online campaign in support of Xu that is addressed to the university's president, Xu Yang. Andrew Nathan of Columbia University in New York is leading the campaign, which has already collected dozens of signatures. The campaign is open until next Friday, after which it will be sent to the university and the names of the signatories will be made public. In the letter, academics have called on Tsinghua to restore Professor Xu's normal status, including his teaching and research duties, and to refrain from any further sanctions against him, adding that the incident has damaged the university's academic reputation. Professor Nathan said Xu should resign if he can't protect Tsinghua from political interference. In an emailed response to VOA, Nathan said political interference destroys the quality of academic work. Another initial signatory, Perry Link from the University of California, Riverside, noted a university that prevents a professor from telling the truth as he sees it is a university that falls far below international standards. Support for Xu and calls for his reinstatement are not just coming from overseas. An earlier call in China has so far garnered more than 700 signatures, nearly 300 of which were from faculty and students at Tsinghua. Our thanks to Joyce Huang for closely following this story and sending details to us. Coming up, the new head of the World Bank begins the big job of financing global aid projects. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Special English. A way to learn American English and much more. Broadcasting a half hour of world news and features every day on radio. You can also find Special English on television and online at voaspecialenglish.com. For 50 years, helping people understand world events and the language and culture of America.
This news from VOA Asia, the three founders of Hong Kong's 2014 Umbrella Movement were convicted Tuesday for their roles in the massive pro-democracy demonstrations. The trio founded the Occupy Central movement in 2013 that preceded the student-led protests that shut down key parts of the city for 79 days in the following year. Visit VOA Asia Facebook for more. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, new leadership comes to the World Bank. While handmade crafts are keeping some women in India employed, as we hear in today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Skylar Ogden.
The World Bank Group has a new president. David Malpass begins his five-year term this week, succeeding Jim Yong Kim, who stepped down in February. The bank's mission is to reduce poverty and provide financial aid for needy countries. It is collectively owned by around 200 countries. Malpass has been a critic of the institution in the past, saying the bank is too big and that multilateralism has damaged the United States. He has also called for a reduction of lending to China, which he says is wealthy enough already. China is the World Bank's third largest shareholder after Japan, with about a 4.5% share of voting power. The largest shareholder at 16% is the United States, which typically nominates the bank's president. Trump nominated Malpass in February, choosing a loyal supporter who served in the administration as the Treasurer's Undersecretary of International Affairs. Critics have voiced concern that he will use the World Bank as an outlet to push Trump's America First agenda, but Malpass has pushed back in response, citing his work as lead negotiator in securing a $13 billion capital increase for the bank last year. Analysts say he has also softened his criticism of the bank in recent months. A group of women in India's northern Kashmir district are becoming well known for their handcraft crocheted items. Former graphic designer Binish Khan launched an online craft shop, Crafts World Kashmir, and through it she's been able to train and provide jobs for a small group of Kashmiri women. Binish Khan.
Response has always been positive. So because of that, we saw that the business is growing and there is a demand for it. After that, a lot of people came and said they want to learn as well. They asked us to show the way it's done.
India has access to many raw materials such as cotton, wool, and silk. It has long held a rich and varied textile tradition, with the Kashmir region being well known for handloom items that women traditionally created at home in their free time. Henna Bhatt is a crocheter.
This is a very good step for us, especially for girls, for the ones who are sitting at home, the ones who do not have anything to do, the ones who are poor, or the ones who are not getting a job. For those people, it is really good.
Binish Khan hopes to train more boys and girls in the future so that more Kashmiri youth can get employment opportunities. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
This news from VOA Asia. More families of victims from the Lion Air crash in Indonesia are suing Boeing after its chief executive apologized and said a software update for the MAX 8 jet would prevent further disasters. Family members and lawyers say CEO Dennis Muhlenberg's comments last week was an admission that helps their cases. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, underneath the city of Los Angeles, workers expanding the city's subway system have uncovered a huge collection of Ice Age fossils. VOA's Kevin Enix unearths details of the latest finds.
This huge collection of fossils was found underneath the streets of Los Angeles, underneath Wilshire Boulevard, to be exact, where workers are excavating an extension of the city subway. The fossils were saved thanks to strict California laws requiring paleontologists to be part of any extensive excavations.
Well, we're incredibly lucky that in California there is such strict mitigation, so that there is requirement for there to be a paleontologist anytime you're digging in native soils. That way, any fossil or artifact that peeks out of that dirt is seen immediately and can be saved. These laws don't exist everywhere, and so fossils are probably being lost all the time.
Some of the most interesting discoveries include a well-preserved skull from a mammoth nicknamed Hayden. Here is the skull of a giant sloth, and vertebrae and bones from giant saber-toothed cats and dire wolves. Stopping work to dig up fossils can be expensive, but LA official Dave Sotero says the paleontologists, the city, and the excavation contractors generally have figured out a way to get the fossils out of the ground and get the work done.
I think in California we have the distinction as having some of the most stringent environmental rules anywhere in the country and possibly the world. So it behooves us to work very closely with the paleontologist, to work very closely with the contractor, and develop a set of best practices that will help us preserve the fossil record but still get our project done.
The fossils provide a great look at this region 20, 30, and even 50,000 years ago. Paleontologist Emily Lindsay says they can teach us about some issues we are dealing with today.
Climate change, which is something that's, of course, of great interest to people today and was also something that the world was experiencing when most of these large animals went extinct, and also how human activities can impact ecosystems, because around the time that humans arrived in the Americas is also around the time when we see most of these big animals that people are so excited about finding here go extinct.
The new fossils will go on display at the Natural History Museum of Los Angeles County. As for the new subway system, it will not be ready for passengers until 2027. Plenty of time to find more fossils. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
Climate change is among the most politically divisive issues, especially here in Washington. Some Democrats are backing a Green New Deal to transform the entire energy system in a decade. Republicans say these proposals would wreck the economy. While the federal government is at a stalemate, some states are taking action. VOA's Steve Barragona went to Massachusetts, where the clean energy workforce is growing.
It's minus 8 degrees Celsius in western Massachusetts, but the weather has not stopped the crew preparing this 8,000-panel solar farm.
For the rest of this week, it's going to be freezing cold.
Veteran electrician Ed Martell says installations have been going nonstop for the last several years.
I thought it was going to be a flash in the pan a couple years ago. I've seen solar just keep going and going and going.
Martell says the boom has been good for electricians like him. The industry has been growing at a time when he says there has not been much other work.
If it wasn't for solar, there would have been a two-year period where I wouldn't have worked at all. So yes, it's very good for us.
Massachusetts now ranks third nationwide in solar jobs, behind California and Florida. Renewable energy is just one way the state is dealing with global warming. In Washington, the climate debate is polarized between Democrats calling for an end to fossil fuels and Republicans saying these proposals will destroy jobs. But Massachusetts Republican Governor Charlie Baker took over from a Democrat and held firm on climate policy.
In Massachusetts, climate change is not a partisan issue. While we sometimes disagree on specific policies, we understand the science.
The state set a target back in 2008 to cut greenhouse gas emissions 80% by mid-century. It charges power companies for carbon pollution and sets policies that encourage efficiency and renewable energy. And the state has invested in new technology, like this wind turbine testing center outside Boston. It's paying off, according to Steve Pike, head of the Massachusetts Clean Energy Center, an agency created to help the state meet its climate goals.
Over the course of the last 8 years, every single year, the number of employees, the number of workers in the clean energy industry has grown. And in total has grown since 2010 by 84%. So not only does investing in clean energy make good sense in terms of climate change, but it also makes economic sense for Massachusetts.
Clean energy is now a $13 billion industry here, employing 110,000 workers. The state's economy has grown more than 20% since 2000, while greenhouse gas emissions have fallen nearly 22%. Pike says fighting climate change does not have to mean wrecking the economy.
Certainly in Massachusetts, what we have found over the last 10 years is just the opposite. In fact, it grows the economy.
There's work to do to power the world without wrecking the climate. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Wales, Massachusetts.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can hear us on the internet. iTunes and SoundCloud, VOA Asia Facebook, and our website, voanews.com. And you can hear us on the radio, like Helps Radio at Help University in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. We thank everybody there who's tuned into our program today, and we hope you join us again for tomorrow's program. We also like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Cedric Franklin, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day.